This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
So if we're looking at trying to create an equitable transportation system, we need to be providing for all users of the system, not only those who own cars.
One of my most vivid childhood memories involves my Boston-born grandfather's anxious and detailed deliberation about which road to take to avoid traffic. But today's discussions about transportation choices are more about the mode than the route, with greener options like biking, public transit, and innovative ride-sharing ideas exploding. This week on Sea Change Radio, Amanda Eakin of the Natural Resources Defense Council takes us on a tour of the latest innovations in urban transport, from car and bike sharing services, to mapping, to the potential of self-driving cars. I can only imagine what my grandfather would think of that. Getting Around, today on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the Deputy Director of Urban Solutions at the NRDC, Amanda Eakin. Amanda, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be here.
So last time you were on the show, you carved out a vision for listeners, which was someday I want to be able to look on my smartphone and have many, many options on how to get from point A to point B. That vision's become a lot clearer in the last couple of years. Why don't you give us an update?
Okay, great. The timing of this interview is excellent because NRDC just held a conference last week called Live, Ride, Share. It was in Southern California. It was the first conference on the subject of shared use mobility ever in Southern California. And really what's emerged since we last spoke is this field of shared use mobility. It's kind of what I think of as the concept of the connection between the sharing economy and transportation. And one of the things that I've personally experienced since we last spoke is the concept of peer-to-peer car share. So we own a Toyota Prius, 2007 car, and we don't use it very much. You know, we take the bus to work, we bike in the city, maybe we occasionally use it on the weekends. I learned about Get Around at another event and decided I'm a perfect candidate for Get Around. My car sits around mostly unused, and I could be making money off it. GetAround installs a little technology in your car that allows people to open it remotely with their smartphone. You leave the key in the car, and then they pay you per hour. So we just decided to sign up and try it out and see what happened. And we had our car on GetAround for the last year, and I would just get little alerts when I was at work that somebody took your car and they're, you know, using it to go for a hike or using it to go to IKEA and do a shopping trip. You know, and we made about $2,000 last year off sharing our car. But to me, much more exciting than the money was just the idea that through sharing my car, I might make it easier for someone in my neighborhood, especially someone new to San Francisco, to think maybe they don't need to own their own car. Because parking is a nightmare in my neighborhood. And it's a nightmare because most of the cars sit around unused. The average American car sits unused 95% of its life. And yet we pay, on average, $9,000 to own and operate these cars that mostly sit around. And then we have challenges because there are so many cars. We have congestion. We have circling for parking for 45 minutes. And it just occurred to me, couldn't we solve some of these challenges or at least take a step towards solving them if we could just share resources? So that's why we decided to share our car on GetAround. And I was amazed at how much use it got. This resource that hadn't existed before because I hadn't made it available, suddenly when it's available in my neighborhood, which is the Panhandle, I would get multiple people using it every single day. And to me, that just expressed a latent demand for using a car sometimes, but not necessarily needing to deal with insurance and parking and the hassle of, you know, paying for the maintenance of owning a car.
And walk us through some of those logistics from a user's standpoint.
Yeah, so GetAround takes a, you know, they take a cut of whatever I make as a car owner in the system, and they use that mostly, I think, to purchase an insurance policy. So I was covered by, I think, $1 million insurance policy. And what I found was they had pretty good customer service. So, for example, I did get a ticket. Somebody parked my car. They didn't turn the wheels in towards the street the right way on a hill, and I got a ticket. And all I had to do was just take a picture of the ticket, send it into them, and they charged it to the renter and took care of that for me. So that was a great experience for us. And what was interesting was to see how many other cars there are on Get Around in our neighborhood. So you could look at a map of our neighborhood. I wish I could show this to your listeners visually. And you could see dozens of little purple dots. And those are all the cars available to rent. So if I feel like a sporty car, I could get a Mini Cooper. I could get an Impreza, you know, Subaru if I'm going to the mountains for the weekend. And what we started to realize, because we don't have a dedicated parking space, we park it on the street, we started to realize owning a car is kind of a raw deal in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We barely use it. And other people were using our car a lot more than we were. And we could get a car whenever we wanted it, in addition to, as you know, with these sort of on-demand mobility services like Lyft and Uber and Sidecar. Within the city, it's very easy to get a ride somewhere whenever you need one. And so the point is here that I'm telling you is that we're about to sell our car because of this sort of emergence of this full ecosystem of mobility services. We're deciding we don't need to own a car anymore because it's never been so easy to get one where and when you want one.
So you've been owning a car, but also using other people's cars through Get Around.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And about how much do you spend as an active Get Around user?
You know, we're going to do a little experiment, actually. We're going to sell our car for about, I hope, $8,000, $8,500, something like that. And we're going to put into an account. We're going to have a separate account that's basically our transportation account. And we're going to track over the course of the year what it actually costs us, unlimited, to, you know, to take trips on the weekends, to take trips in the city, and we're going to see.
What's their pricing model generally?
Well, I had a colleague, just to tell you an anecdote, I had a colleague who did this. He just took the insurance cost. After they sold their car, they just took the insurance, which was about $1,200, and put that $1,200 into a bank account, and then said, we're going to spend as much as we want, take cabs anywhere we want, rent cars with abandon, and see where we are at the end of the year. At the end of the year, they had only used two-thirds of just the insurance amount in order to pay for the car, let alone all the other costs. So he found that it was a great deal to get rid of the car.
And how does Get Around charge users compared to like a Zipcar or a city car share?
Yeah, I think it's comparable, really. The owner gets to set the price based on what they think the market value is for their car. So our car is a 7-year-old Toyota Prius. We rent it out for $750 an hour. So I think that's pretty standard with, you know, city car share and Zipcar and those kinds of things. Other cars, you know, if you see fancier cars, you can get a BMW, whatever. Maybe those are a little bit more expensive. You can set a weekly rate. You can set a daily rate.
Also, there's been a lot of maturation in these ride-sharing companies, these transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft and Sidecar. Why don't you give us some of the ups and downs of their evolution?
So I just told you we made a decision to sell our car. Part of that calculus on my part is that it has never been before so easy to get access to a car. And one of the ways that manifests is, you know, if I want a ride home, for example, from the office, let's say I get some boxes shipped to my office. I don't want to drive my car downtown because $30 for parking and it's a pain to drive downtown. But maybe I want to take the bus downtown and just get a ride home. Well, what's different in my mind about these companies is that you can pull up an application on your phone and you can literally see the vehicles. You can see the vehicles that you have access to in real time. And it's a sort of a secure feeling that if you ever need a ride, you can get one. So for me, that's a piece of my decision to sell my car that I know I can always get a ride when I need one. Now, what emerged to me when these companies started, because there's a lot of controversy. Are these companies good for the environment? Are these companies creating more people driving around? It's not clear. And I'll just tell you, we don't have the answer to that question right now. We want to launch into some studies that really look at the environmental impact of these transportation network companies. There are some very preliminary studies with not statistically significant sample sizes, with just a couple hundred people. And they tell us very interesting things. They tell us some people are taking these instead of transit. They tell us some people are taking these to access transit sometimes as sort of the first mile, last mile solution. They say some people are more willing to to think of the idea of selling their car because these companies are around. So there's a lot of different information out there, and we need our best researchers to tackle this question. We don't have those conclusive studies yet in terms of the environmental impact.
When you're saying we, you mean the Natural Resources Defense
Council. Natural Resources Defense Council. We don't have studies yet, conclusive studies on the environmental impact of transportation network companies. But what I think is very interesting is that when these companies know where I want to go, for example, they are coming online with these services now that allow you to share a ride with somebody else. So if they have a community of people and they know where everybody wants to go, this launched, for example, I think Lyft, Line launched in August of last year. I know Uber Pool launched in LA last week. The idea is if they know where you're going and they know where somebody else wants to go, they could link you up in real time to share a ride.
To save you money and also be more efficient with their vehicles.
Well, exactly. To save you money, to increase the occupancy of the cars that are driving around. But what I like about this is, I've always, just as an environmentalist and as a person who just doesn't like to waste money, I've always wanted to share rides. For example, coming home from the airport, I've always sort of glanced at people in line to try to make eye contact and see if there's anybody that might want to share the ride. And it's almost never successful. It's just very awkward and uncomfortable. Well, with these services now, I can just enter in where I want to go, and they will, you can see it happening. They'll search through their community, and then they'll find you a match, if there is a match, and then you can share the ride.
El gato mo, el gato mo, el gato mo, el gato mo. When the Lord get ready, El gato mo.
Follow the shift to sustainability with SeaChange Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to Amanda Eakin. She's the Deputy Director of Urban Solutions at the Natural Resources Defense Council. In terms of incorporating public transportation with these more individual solutions, how are cities responding?
So a lot of times in transportation, we talk about something called the first mile, last mile problem with public transportation. And that is a transit trip, a bus trip or a train trip might get you really the bulk of the way towards where you want to go. But if it doesn't quite deliver you at your destination and you're left having to walk a mile and a half or 2 miles.
If you have things to carry.
Sometimes it just doesn't work for people. And so instead of taking most of that trip on transit, which would, of course, help to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and vehicle miles traveled, instead they'll just drive the whole way. And this is something transportation planners have been wrestling with for a long time. So one of the things that is exciting about this emerging field of shared use mobility is the idea of having some solutions to that first mile, last mile problem. So, for example, you've seen the emergence of bike share programs around the world. I don't know if you've had the privilege to ride a bike share bike in your experience.
I know that in San Francisco, they're pretty expensive still. I have had experience in Bordeaux, France, where it's subsidized by a advertising company, which pays for these amazing bikes, and they cost like a dollar. They're like a euro for an hour or something. They're super cheap. But here you go down to San Francisco and they're like $7 an hour. They're pretty expensive. They seem more like for tourists as opposed to residents who want to get from point A to B reliably.
Yeah, I think the San Francisco system is still fairly limited in scope. If you compare, for example, the New York City system has 10,000 bicycles.
Wow.
The entire Bay Area system, I think, has 700. And that includes all the bikes in San Francisco, as well as all the bikes up and down the peninsula. So for me, we need to further invest in that bike share system so it has some scale and you can really get where you want to go. You can't take a bike, for example, to the Mission District from downtown.
Who paid for the New York system? Is this all private?
New York system was funded by, I think, Citibank. That's called Citibike, actually. So that was a major slug of private investment. But what we've seen sometimes with those programs is you can maybe take a transit trip most of the way, and then you can take a bike share the last mile, and that helps to complete the system. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the promises of this whole shared mobility industry.
Can you speak about the generational shift that's underway in most of urban America in terms of shared mobility?
One of the things we're seeing is that young people, in particular, are not as interested in owning cars as previous generations, and not even as interested in learning how to drive. So only 67% of young people even have a driver's license. And then you ask if they'd rather have a smartphone or a car, and more choose the phone, which I think is very telling, because with a phone, they feel they can access mobility when they need it, whether that's through a Lyft or an Uber, or whether that's through getting a get-around car or a Zipcar or a city car share. There's this idea that I can access mobility when I want it. And I actually heard a really funny commentary on this recently at our conference, that we talk a lot about distracted driving and how texting is a distraction to driving. Mm-hmm. And what we're hearing now is that driving is actually a distraction to texting, where young people are so interested in being connected to one another that the time spent driving actually feels like a time they have to be disconnected from social networks. And that's sort of a disincentive, which is just a fascinating
evolution.
Kind of
bizarre.
It is.
So you're saying that maybe we're a generation away from, so when these 16 to 18 year old people become 26 to 32 year old people and start cranking out babies, they might be a little more accepting of shared mobility options.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. And the other thing that we're seeing is that just seeing a real resurgence of demand for living in cities, living in places that are walkable and provide a lot of transportation choices, and places where you don't necessarily need to own a car, and seeing people figure out how to do that with kids. And mobility with children is interesting. One of the things that we're considering in my family is when we sell the car, we're considering getting a family electric bicycle, which can actually take two kids on the back. I don't know if you've ever ridden an electric bicycle with an electric assist, but in terms of San Francisco's hills, if you want to be lugging kids and if you want to be lugging groceries around, it's a pretty incredible thing.
Right.
When you can just with your thumb get a little extra boost up the hill, it sort of flattens out the city in terms of hills. So we're seeing actually people experiment with creative ways of even moving kids around.
And we've seen creative ways of trying to flatten out hilly cities through technology. I'm namely thinking of bike maps that you can get on your phone now that will show you the flattest route to get from point A to point B. And it shows little shading where there's hills and bike lanes that are being created where you'd feel safe with your two kids on your bike, et cetera.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, that's like another way that I think technology is changing our understanding of our choices and our available options and routes. Is I can now go to a city I've never been to before. I can take my phone, punch in my destination, put it in the bike mode on Google Maps, put it in my back pocket, and it can just talk me along as if I were in a car driving and put me on the best streets that I should use to get to my destination. I mean, that wasn't available to us just a couple of years ago. Same thing with walking directions, by the way. If I'm in LA and I'm trying to get to a meeting, I can just put on the walking directions and I can navigate my way along. I mean, that's really changing our ability to wayfind and pick the best mobility option.
Let me throw a little ethical wrench into this discussion. Mm-hmm. I had an interesting discussion this weekend with a dear friend of mine who's very in touch with the voiceless in the urban community of Oakland. Mm-hmm. And he was saying they put these bike lanes right near his house, mm-hmm. right down the middle of the street, it seems like. And the only people who are using them are white hipsters who are just texting on their phone, riding their bikes like they have no one to answer to, while there's people who've been in this community, little old African-American lady who was trying to get around this bike. He saw this lady who was just really flummoxed trying to drive around this biker who was completely oblivious and riding in this bike lane. So he he had some problems with the way the bike lanes are being instituted, that they're pushing people who are voiceless in the community outside of that conversation. How would you have engaged my friend on that?
Just having come from this Live, Ride, Share conference in LA, a couple of interesting conversations emerged around this subject. There's a woman I met named Yolanda Davis Overstreet, who's actually creating a film right now called, I think it's called Ride in Living Color. And it is about the subject of African Americans on bikes, a little told story. She's so she spoke a little bit about her film, and it's really in development and really wanting to tell that story. And then there's a woman named Tamika Butler, who is the head of the Los Angeles County Bicycle Coalition, who says that LA probably has some of the most diverse bicycle ridership of actually any city in the country, and that's not often understood or a story that's often told, but that we need to be creating safe, active transportation choices for all Angelenos and really, you know, all urban residents. I mean, the fact is the car ownership, the amount people drive, and car ownership very much skews with income. So if we're going to be providing transport, what we've done in the last several years, we've got several decades, we've really gotten out of balance where most of our transportation investments cater to only those people who own cars. So mostly we're building roads, we're building highways, we're widening those facilities. And it's a much smaller percentage that's going to transit and active transportation. By that, I mean walking and bicycling facilities. So if we're looking at trying to create an equitable transportation system, we need to be providing for all users of the system, not only those who own cars.
Miss the Saturday dance. I heard the crowd at the floor. It's awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore. I thought I'd visit the club. Got as far as the door. I just couldn't bear it without you. I don't get around much anymore. Darling, I guess my mind is more at ease.
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Amanda Eakin. She's the Deputy Director of Urban Solutions at the Natural Resources Defense Council. One of the things that sounds like it's right out of the Jetsons are these self-driving vehicles or autonomous vehicles. Do you see it as a potential solution? Where's the advantage?
Well, I think it's really early to tell. I mean, that's the absolute truth. We don't know yet, but there are conversations kind of on both sides.
For people who don't even know what a self-driving vehicle network might look like, could you explain that vision?
Well, some people talk about how the car might drop you off, and then the car could actually go park itself, so you wouldn't need as much on-location parking for any given use.
This wouldn't be your car, would it? But this would be a shared mobility autonomous vehicle?
It is unknown. It is undetermined what is actually going to happen with these things. But, for example, Salida Reynolds, who is the general manager of the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, who spoke at our conference last week, she said she likes to think about autonomous vehicles and shared mobility really as one, where you would be able to access an on-demand vehicle. It would take you to your destination, and then it would be called off to move someone else to their destination. So that could have pretty interesting ramifications for urban form in terms of alleviating the need for parking spaces. For example, I'm sure you've heard of Don Shoup, who's the parking guru in
friend
California.
Of the show.
Friend of the show. Great. He estimates, and you know, the estimates are all over the place, but he estimates there are in Los Angeles 7 parking spaces for every car. Because we have this kind of this car with us for everything we want to do, and we go do lots of things throughout the day. So there's a pretty significant multiple of the number of parking spaces that need to be available for every car. So think about the ramifications from that standpoint. What if you didn't need to provide 7 parking spaces in a city for every car, and instead the car could just go off and park itself, or it could go off and pick up other travelers? Think about the time that people would not spend circling for parking anymore. And all, you know, it's estimated in cities up to 30% of traffic congestion is just people looking for a parking space. So those could be pretty positive implications.
And how could autonomous vehicles eliminate some of this?
So for example, if I needed to go somewhere, I could just take a car, it could drop me off, and I wouldn't need to look for a parking space, and I would just be at my destination, and perhaps the car would go off and pick somebody else up next. But on the flip side, the fear that we potentially have is maybe it's easier for people to drive longer distances if they can sleep in the car or read in the car. One of the things that's interesting to see from the car company, even some of the car companies are starting to position themselves as mobility companies, that they're maybe seeing the move towards thinking about transportation, thinking about cars as a service rather than as an asset that you necessarily own. Certainly, many people own cars and they will continue to do so. But at least what we're seeing in cities is the idea of needing a ride from point to point now. That doesn't necessarily need to be in your own car. Maybe it's not as convenient to have your own car because of the parking on each end. But that that you think about access to mobility instead of necessarily ownership.
And just to bring our conversation full circle, when you think of a company like Getaround, that experience with an autonomous vehicle would be quite similar, except for having a robot driving you around and having a third party or a municipality owning these self-driving vehicles, right?
Right. It's so early to tell who would own them, how the structures would work. But what I've found in my personal experience, sometimes I need a car. I don't always need a car. And sometimes what I need is a car when I'm in a place that's not where my car is. So it's not always practical to have my car with me at all times. A lot of times you just need it for maybe one leg of the trip. The largest growing segment of the whole car sharing space is in fact point-to-point car sharing. Think about traditional city car share, Zipcar. You pick up the car in one place, you drive it around, you pay the whole time you're not using it, the whole time you're using it, drop it back in the same place. Maybe you've heard of Car2Go. Car2Go is point-to-point, one-way car sharing. You pay by the minute, pick it up, take it where you're going, drop it off.
Similar to like the bike sharing model.
Similar to the bike sharing model. It's pretty organic. You take it where you need to go, and you're done with it. And one of the things that's so interesting about that is I think it does a better job of approximating or matching our true needs. The emerging innovation is kind of, it's just better customizing the system to match our lives when we actually need it. And that's exactly the kind of innovation we need to increase the efficiency of the transportation system and bring down its environmental impact.
Is the vision for self-driving vehicles to be sharing the road with human drivers at the same time, or would these be routes that would be limited to autonomous vehicles only?
Well, I think the vision is yes, that they probably would be sharing the road. But that's why the safety questions are first and foremost is to make sure that we don't create unnecessary safety burdens.
Amanda Eakin, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Hot Chocolate, The Rolling Stones, and B.B. King. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. and tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.